because OCD is a what if problem. So all you need to think is, what if they don't love me enough? Oh God, that'd be terrible. Okay, what can I do to make sure they love me? Oh, all right, now I'm going to have to send them a text, because if I don't send them a text, then they'll know how much I love them. Maybe they will get more and more doubts in their life. And then maybe they'll come home tonight and they'll say, you know, I think that I want to break up. And oh my gosh, what if that would be terrible, right? And you're driven by an immediate, I have to fix this thing right now.
It's Violet Benson, your favorite meme queen and the big sis you didn't ask for, but need. Welcome to Almost Adulting.
Almost.
You ready?
Hi, everyone. I'm Violet Benson. Welcome to a brand new Almost Adulting, the largest self-love podcast and movement, your number one destination for personal growth. So today we are going to focus all around relationships. If you ever felt like you've had relationship doubts that feel overwhelming and like no matter what you're trying to do, it just can't seem to work through those issues. Maybe you feel like you're constantly asking your partner for reassurance, or you are trying to reassure yourself that you're not crazy, but then you're stressing out about questions about your compatibility, your connection, your attraction to one another. It just won't go away. Well, what if I told you that you're not crazy and it's actually potentially could be a type of OCD known as relationship OCD or ROCD, which is why today I'd like to welcome Dr. Patrick McGrath. Did I say your last name properly?
McGrath, yeah.
Yes. Fine. Okay, cool. He serves as the chief clinic officer for NOCD, where he oversees the company's clinical protocols and team of OCD specialists. They are one of the world's leading providers for virtual therapy for OCD. NOCD basically offers evidence-based treatment for adults and children around the world that are struggling with various types of OCD-related conditions. And he's also the author of the books, Don't Try Harder, Try Different, and also the OCD Answer book.
That is correct. Spot on.
Okay, amazing. Welcome. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so to start this off, would you mind explaining kind of what relationship OCD is and how it differs from the common misconceptions about simply, quote unquote, overthinking in a relationship?
Sure. So obsessive compulsive disorder is two things. We have intrusive thoughts or images or urges. We call those obsessions. And then we do compulsions, which are behaviors or mental acts to try to neutralize those things. So this is a very serious mental health condition. It can take hours and hours of people's day trying to get reassurance because there's a lack of ability to deal with the doubt and uncertainty. So in a relationship, of course, we'd love to have no doubt. We'd love to know that the person that we're with is the one. This is the right person. I've made the right choice. And OCD, being nicknamed the doubting disorder, will say, are you really sure about that? Maybe there's a few things that aren't quite right. Why don't we spend the next 78 hours thinking about that and seeing what we can find out? And you can see how the cycle of the hamster wheel of hell, I call it, just keeps going around and around for people.
Right. Yeah, it's debilitating. So in your experience, what would you say the underlying factors that typically contribute to the development of relationship OCD?
Well, OCD attacks the things that you love or the things that are really important to you. So if you have OCD and you have a relationship and it's starting to become more important to you, that's the thing that OCD is going to gravitate for. It never grabs onto things you don't really care about. It's only about things that are really important, and it's going to instill that doubt and uncertainty about the thing.
What would you say one of the biggest misconceptions there are when you're treating patients or people that come in for other types of OCD or relationship OCD?
One of the big things I always try to educate people in the public is many people will say, oh, I have a little OCD. And we don't. We have quirks. We all do weird things. I might check the garage door twice or jiggle the lock a few more times than most people do. That's fine. OCD, again, a very serious thing, taking hours of your day. And so it is okay to have doubts and insecurities about things. There's nothing wrong with that. And it's okay to check something here and there as well, too. When it gets to a point that it starts interfering in your life or your relationship, that's when you're looking at potentially a switch over to an actual obsessive compulsive disorder problem.
What's the number one question that you tend to get from couples who come see you?
What answer can I give them to help them? And I always say there isn't an answer to give them to help them because OCD will never accept an answer. It will always doubt it and want more. So when I'm working with the couples, I'm actually taking the couple who doesn't have the OCD and telling them to stop giving answers to the questions instead of trying to give more answers, because no one with OCD has ever gotten enough answers to make the OCD go away.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Patrick, for those of us who can't stop wondering if we're with quote unquote the one, at what point does it stop being just a bad type of, you know, rom-com habit and fun, and it starts being something like relationship OCD that's debilitating for a lot of people?
Yeah, there's probably a great deal of discussion about that. There's checking. Maybe you're even wondering where that person is all the time. And I've even seen people get to a point of, I'd like to know where you are at all times. Could you check in with me every half hour just to tell me what's going on? And that's different than a doubt about cheating or anything like that. It's just more of this internal insecurity that one has about how will I know that this person is the right person for me? They will then do the same thing internally as well, too. They'll go through all these things. Are they tall enough? Are they small enough? Are they right enough? Are they wrong enough? Are they all these? There's never going to be all the check marks is ticked in any relationship. No matter how good your relationship is, there's always going to probably be something kind of annoying about somebody that you're dating, right? It just kind of happens. And OCD says, no, there is the one out there. And you should find that one that does tick all the boxes off and that there will never be any issues with whatsoever. And that's a lie that people fall for when they have OCD.
So if someone notices that they are constantly in their own way when it comes to dating, but also probably begins to affect their everyday life, how do you come in to help them? Like, what's the first step?
Well, first, I thank them for being brave, because to admit to being this is a problem is really difficult for people. And I say that my goal is to help you be the best you can be in your relationship. And being the best you can be in your relationship means that you're going to be okay with having doubts and insecurities about things, and you're going to accept them as a part of being in a relationship instead of having to have all of the answers all of the time. So instead of them coming to me because they hope I'm going to give them all the answers and tell them all the things they want to hear, I say, I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to do is help you learn to live with the doubts and the insecurities and recognize that you can handle them without having to get answers to all of those things.
Got it. So it's about being self-aware, because I think a lot of times when we are looking for someone to fix us, or whether it's medication or therapists and things like that, we think, okay, once I'm fixed, it will never be an issue again, versus being self-aware where you catch yourself now. That's part of the treatment, right?
Love that. Yes, that's exactly what it is. Recognition and moving on instead of constantly seeking more and more information.
Right. So with people who have that type of OCD and they're constantly looking for the one to check all the boxes, in the world of social media, do you think all that swiping is actually harming a lot of people in the dating world?
Sure. I mean, if OCD is going to now just be focused on one thing, like how somebody looks, now you're going to try to find the perfect looking person. So you might be swiping and swiping and swiping because their one eyebrow is a little bit off the other one, and it's not quite right. And they have to be perfect and symmetrical and all of these things. And you might therefore just swipe no to everybody because nobody is yet meeting the criteria that OCD demands that they meet.
Right. Especially when there's social media, they also see all these perfect couples, and it gives them unrealistic expectations of what your relationship should look like.
Right. I once saw one of those funny inspirational posters that showed a beautiful couple, and then it showed the same people dating other people later on in life. And the funny inspirational quote was, even the perfect couple got annoyed with each other and decided to break up. So, we're not here for perfection.
Yeah, that's so funny, especially when we grow up watching all these fairy tales and it's always a happy ending, but we don't know the happy ending. We only see it leading up to it. They get together and then it's over. So we don't actually know what happens.
Absolutely not. And when your goal is perfection, you're going to fail before you've even started because it's not attainable.
Yeah. Wow. What's one fun piece of advice that's practical for those out there who are wondering if their relationship worries are normal or if there's something more?
If you can get through the day with an answer and accept it, and even though it might not be the exact answer that you wanted, that you could say, you know what, I'm going to just accept it. I'm going to move on and we're going to move forward from this. then doesn't sound like an OCD thing to me. But if you have to have this one answer and you have to truly understand it to a level that no one else in the world would ever have to go to, and therefore there's no way for anyone to give you an answer that's satisfying, now we're in trouble.
Okay, so if I'm looking back when I was younger with my first, well, my second boyfriend, who was like my life because of my nervous system when I was younger, it was probably dysregulated. And based because of the dysregulation, I was really drawn to this person. We were together on and off for many years. Anyway, when I was younger, 19 or 20, whenever we would break up, it felt like I couldn't breathe without him. Like I wouldn't be able to get out of bed for 3 days. So I, looking back, I don't believe for me that was OCD. I think for me, I didn't love myself enough. So how can people then full on differentiate between me overly depending on this person being my life? Like if he doesn't love me, if I don't get that validation, then I don't deserve to even, you know, I can't walk out of bed, get out of bed versus it's my thoughts. And I think something really bad is going to happen. And I need these logical answers and so on. So how can you differentiate the two?
In that situation where you weren't getting out of bed, you were saddened, right? You had a loss. And that's not uncommon for people who lose someone that they love and there's a breakup. You weren't doing compulsions, though, it doesn't sound like to me. And so that would be the differentiator for me.
Got
if I'm
it.
Not seeing examples of compulsions, I don't have obsessive compulsive disorder. You have to have the compulsions to have OCD. It is okay, though, to have reactions to things. There's nothing wrong with that.
That makes so much sense. Okay, it's the compulsions. It was more I just didn't feel good enough without this person and I was going through depression because I needed to work on myself, inner love and so on. That's the difference. I'm not getting out of bed until he gets back together with me.
That's it.
Because I was 19.
Yeah. you were not doing compulsions there.
Okay. That's really helpful though to understand the difference between the two.
So
people don't try to misdiagnose themselves now. For somebody out there who does have those compulsions and all that, and they currently have a partner, how can their partner best support them through their hardships?
One of my favorite activities I do is I say, we're going to get a journal or a notebook and we're going to put it on the dining room table or in the kitchen counter or something. And if the person with OCD asks their partner a question that they've already asked them before and gotten an answer to, I have the partner go to the notebook. I have them write down the question. I have them write down the answer. And then going forward, I say, now, if they ever ask you that question again, all I want you to do is say, that's in the notebook. We've already discussed it and we're not going to talk about it again.
Sorry. Wouldn't some people get really upset by that? Because it feels a little passive aggressive.
Yes. It's not passive aggressive, though, in the sense that how many times do you have to ask the same question and hear the same answer? And in OCD, there's never enough times. So do you want your relationship to constantly be rehashing these questions over and over again, getting the same answer over and over again until one day, there's always that one day where you give a slightly different answer than you did the day before.
Right.
And then the person with OCD says, oh, wait a minute, you gave a different answer today. Why did you give me a different answer? The last 72 times I asked you this question, you gave me this answer, but today you said something slightly different. Now we've got to spend hours and hours talking about that. Have you changed your mind? Where does that go? I don't want people doing that because then you're just doing that to serve OCD. So what I want is the assurance that here's the question you've asked. This is my answer. I'm sticking to it. And I don't want to have that conversation anymore because if we do, it's only in service of obsessive compulsive disorder.
Oh, I like that. I like that instead of it's coddling, I think that's how you pronounce it properly.
Coddling, yeah.
Yeah. Instead of doing that to the person, you're right. It only benefits the OCD.
That's it.
So instead it's saying, you know, we're in a grown-up relationship and also you have to think of the emotions and everything of your partner who doesn't have that. They're doing their best.
Thanks.
So I like that. It's more, I think, the grown-up relationship and you still have your notebook where you can look at the answer and be like reminded, oh, okay, everything's fine. Everything's okay. I like that. That's a great answer. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
So my sister is going to a wedding in a month from now and she asked me to help her find the perfect dress. And of course she came to me because I am quote unquote a fashionista. I love clothes. I love shopping. And she was looking basically for a beautiful dress for that wedding occasion, but also on a budget since she has 3 children and they just opened a third doggy daycare. I guided her to go on Lulus.com. Why Lulus.com? I feel like it's been like my best kept secret. Not only do they have amazing dresses for like every occasion, whether it's for like brunch with the girls on a Sunday, so it's like a Sunday dress, like a summer spring dress. They have beautiful dresses for your birthday, for a birthday party, late night, date night, girls night, for a wedding, to be a guest. They have outfits for every single moment. Why do I love Lulus? Is because they're feminine, they're playful, they're approachable, they're reliable. Lulus has this amazing value and quality for the price. I love their clothes for the quality, and I love their clothes even more for the price. There's no occasion the Lulus can't handle, okay? There's an outfit for all of life's moments. Lulu has the dresses, the outfits that you will remember with your friends and you will never forget. So not only did my sister buy the perfect dress for the wedding she's going to a month from now, but she also already bought her birthday dress, which is like 6 months from now, okay? I promise you, you can't go wrong with shopping on Lulus. I love them. So visit Lulus.com right now and you can use my code adulting at checkout for 20% off of your first purchase. I didn't even give that to my sister. So you guys get that special treatment that even my sister didn't get. So again, that is Lulus.com and use my code adulting for 20% off of your first order to buy your perfect dress for whatever occasion you currently have in your life. New customers only, terms apply. Okay, so Patrick, let's dive into the people who are currently dating and not in full-on relationship. Let's say, for example, people who are dating and they're getting ghosted. I want to dive in quickly into ghosting. Why do you think people ghost in the first place? And what should you do if you're then obsessively now checking if the person who ghosted you is sending you messages and now you're obsessing over why they ghosted you, so on?
I think people ghost because they're afraid of conflict and they don't want to disappoint someone or let somebody down. So it's just easier to walk away from the situation than it is to do anything. In terms of what to do, I think if you feel like you've been ghosted, you set a thing on your schedule. I will check this message once every week for the next 3 weeks. And if there's nothing at that point, then I agree that I'm going to walk away from that situation. You know, you give yourself a time limit, you give yourself a number. I don't have to just cut people off from things. You know, sometimes people think therapy means you're just going to stop that now. Well, if they could have done that, they didn't need to see me, right? They could have just done that. So I work on a system of getting people to gradually decrease doing certain behaviors in order to help them get used to not doing them anymore.
Got it. Okay, so speaking of then text messaging, we've all been there when we're staring at our phones, we're trying to analyze every single text message from a coworker, a friend, or a potential lover. So can you tell me the difference on how to tell the difference between a normal text, jitters, and then something that might need a bit more attention, like relationship OCD?
In relationship OCD, the texting might be more reading into the text that you've received than it would be necessarily into the text that you sent, where you're trying to see, how is this person really feeling about relationship? Do they really seem to love me? That message was a little shorter than all the other messages that I've received recently. I wonder if they're frustrated now. Maybe I should call them. Maybe we should have a discussion about it or something. So you'd see a lot of that. Where on the flip side, you might see more like a perfectionism kind of OCD struggle with even starting a text message to someone, because what perfect message can I send to them? What if it's not right? What if they read into it a wrong way? And they might spend hours reading it, thinking all the different ways it could be interpreted and how the other person would respond and everything. And so that could play a role in it.
So then how can someone then, when they're analyzing it, a text message, they're now analyzing a post on Instagram, and they're analyzing what happened last week or how their partner looked at someone, so on. How can someone tell if their jealousy is just them being protective or if it's slowly now sliding into the OCD territory where the line between cute and jealous and, okay, this is becoming a problem?
There's some research going on this right now because we're recognizing more of what the role of jealousy might be and where does it cross the line into OCD. So it's a fascinating question. And right now the term is even called retroactive jealousy, where I'm mad at you about people you've dated before I even knew you. I once talked to someone who was in their late 60s who was mad at his wife that at 15, she kissed somebody on a date one time before they met when they were 16. And and was still angry at her over the fact that it was just a kiss and just a small kiss, not even a big kiss or anything like that. So never underestimate the power of jealousy in these types of situations. Now, you said that cute jealousy would be, you know, something that we could let go of and we could move on from. In the OCD world, you don't let go of it. There's always more meaning, more answers to be given, more attempts to try to understand. And OCD will always tell you, we just don't quite understand enough yet. So if we could just get a little bit more information, then maybe we could fully understand. Of course, you never fill that vessel, though. You know, there's always a void there that you're wanting more and more from.
The way you describe it, it sounds so debilitating to be that person where
yes,
there's so much chaos going on in your head every single day. Like I can't imagine. So do you have any stories of anyone that you've worked with before that how they were experiencing that type of chaos and what they were able to do to kind of get through it, to live a functioning normal life?
Yeah. My goal always is to have people stick a toe in the water and see how it feels and eventually get into the deep end and do some swimming. Not, of course, throwing you in the deep end of the pool and figure it out. So I take people who are afraid to do anything and help them break that down into tiny little steps and do things. So from a phobia of an elevator, where we might first just look at the elevator once the door opens and think about being in the elevator, and then putting one foot in the elevator, leaving one foot on the building floor, and then walking in the elevator, but walking out before it closes, walking in, let the door close, and then open it, and then come out, and then go up one floor, and then get out, and two, and those kinds of things. That's the buildup of stuff that we do. So that's how we try to approach any of these things. And in a relationship OCD, it would be similar to, you're not going to get the full questions answered here, but we'll allow for a 3-minute conversation, and then we're going to cut that conversation off and we're going to say, that's where we're going to be at for today. If we need to continue it, we continue it tomorrow, but we're not going to discuss that again today.
Wow. Okay. So for someone that's newly dating again and they're experiencing relationship OCD, mm-hmm. is there a way to determine how much social media stalking is normal in a new relationship, or at what point it goes back into potentially going back into your old habits of relationship OCD?
Yeah. I think it's really interesting because there's so much more available out there now. When I was younger, you never had any of this information available. So now there's so many things that you could look up and you could scroll and you could see, oh, it looks like you dated this person. It looks like you dated this person. And in those kinds of cases, OCD is going to grab onto those things and really recognize, for anybody who has this, that one of the best things to do might just be abstinence, where I will not look at your social media pages that go beyond the date that we met each other. Just like you would want somebody who's drinking to totally abstain from alcohol, you might also want to just help somebody recognize that it's best for me to say, I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to focus on this going forward.
Do you think it's because people also do this out of this habit because we don't realize that things that feel familiar, we're just more attached to it? And even if misery is what's familiar, or obsessing over something over and over again, knowing I'm not going to get the answer because it feels so familiar, that's why I constantly go back to doing that same thing.
I think there's part of it there. And I think, again, OCD tells a lie to people. And the lie is, you actually can achieve an answer. You just haven't done quite enough to get it. And people keep falling for that. I treated someone who was 90 plus years old, who had OCD for over 70 years, who had done 70 years of compulsions, hoping to get the answer. And finally, in their 90s, decided, maybe there's something else I need to do because I haven't been able to achieve the level of understanding that I've tried to in 70 plus years.
What answer were they searching for?
They wanted a guarantee that they weren't going to harm other people in some way. And they could never get the absolute answer to that was the case. And my job was not to help guarantee that they wouldn't harm other people. It was to accept the fact that it could happen. It is a possibility, but possibility doesn't equal probability. Meaning, just because something's possible doesn't mean it's probable. I mean, you're wearing some headphones right now, and there's a chance, by the way, that an electrical current could shoot through the wire and zap your brain.
Perfect.
As we talk to each other. There's a possibility of that. Should you take the headphones off right now and just say, I'm never wearing them again? Because what if that were to happen? No, we willingly accept risk on a daily basis. But OCD says, that's fine, other than this one area. In this area, no risk allowed. Must have absolute answers in this area. No risk is to be tolerated at all.
Wow. Okay. All my little perfectionist quirks suddenly don't seem like such a big deal compared to when you're talking about OCD and how debilitating that must be. So it makes me actually appreciate, you know, it makes me look at my little quirks as, okay, I guess it's not that bad.
Yeah. Everybody has quirky things. It's part of being a human, right? I will use this example all the time. There's many people who drive over a bridge and at the top of the bridge have at some point thought, I could totally turn the wheel of the car right now and shoot the car off the bridge.
Everyone thinks that.
Well, of course. What? There's nothing wrong with that. But if you have OCD, you know what you think? I should never drive on bridges again, because now that I thought it might actually happen. And what if I were to do it? And that would be terrible. I'd be responsible for killing everybody. So now I'll just never drive on bridges again. And that way, that's the way I'll keep everybody safe.
I do recall that when I first needed to get my, I don't think it's OCD, obviously. I do recall when I first needed to get my license and I was too scared to drive on, especially specifically on freeways. I just had this fear and I just couldn't get it behind a car. And then I went to therapy for it. And the therapist told me that it actually had nothing to do with me driving, had to do with my control issues. And it was my fear of being unable to control every single person around me. And I struggled with that because I like to be in control of everything around me. Like even if I watch movies, I will go really quickly to the end just to know what happens in order to be able to watch the beginning. So I need to know what's going to happen or I can't enjoy anything. I don't like feeling anxious about anything. So once I realized it was my control issues, it was in a way, for me, it set me free because I realized, oh, it's not, I can actually drive because I thought I will never be able to drive. I can't figure out what's wrong with me. Once I realized my control issues and I can't control the people around me, I can only control what's happening in my car by being alert when I'm driving, then I was able to get behind a wheel again.
That's awesome. And that's exactly what we would want in therapy. And in fact, control is one of the very things I talk a lot about people, because people are so afraid to not be in control. And part of my job is to point out, what control do we really have? I mean, if I tell you, don't breathe for the next 10 minutes, will you be able to do that?
No.
Okay. If I tell you, don't think of a pink elephant, what do you think you'll think?
A pink elephant.
Okay. And if I tell you, don't ever be anxious again for the rest of your life, do you think that will work if I tell you to never be anxious again? Okay. So you don't have total control of your thoughts, your feelings, or your behaviors.
Yeah, that's really frustrating for me.
Right. Right. And that's part of helping people accept the fact that that's the case. That's part of being a human, actually, is that we don't have total control over anything.
Is that how people who have those type of control issues, me included, but I think I've been working on it. Mm-hmm. Is it just coming to the realization that you just actually have no control over anything? And it's so depressing when you realize that?
Well, it doesn't have to be depressing, because there's other people who do realize that and are not depressed by it whatsoever. So it's not required to feel depressed about that. I can help you feel neutral about that. And that's where I'd like to get anybody, is to have more of a neutral experience with it.
I think that's where I've gone to a point, because I used to be such a control freak. I feel that my days were constantly ruined because I would figure out how I wanted my day to be, including with the people and our conversations and how the day would go. And then I was constantly just disappointed and upset until I had to just come to the realization that I have no control over anyone around me and I can only control how I feel and how I react. So I just constantly have to tell myself, walk myself through just whatever happens today, happens.
Right. And even in that control, you don't have total control over the way you feel or react, because somebody could throw a fake spider at you right now. And if you're afraid of spiders, you're going to run, right? So that wouldn't even be a conscious decision. You would just do it automatically. So we even have to accept that we don't have total control.
Oh, come on.
Sorry to burst the bubble there. I apologize. I'm a real downer on these podcasts, I know.
No, but that's good. That's helpful, because even my therapist had to walk me through that as well, even with my thoughts, because I was like, well, at least I have control of my thoughts. And he said, no, you do not, just the same way you said that, which is true. Yeah. But it's about, okay, here are my thoughts. Oh, it's happening again. Okay, let's figure that out. Let's walk through it. It's not the end of the world. Blah, 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 blah. So, okay. Correct. Okay, so can you help my listeners and me understand the line between love and obsession? How do we keep our intense feelings for someone from consuming our thoughts in our everyday lives?
There's nothing wrong with being in love with someone and having love for someone. And you can feel that love even if that person isn't near you. You just know that you have that feeling for something. And you truly do feel it, right? It's a part of you. In obsession, there's doubt. There's insecurity. What if we don't love each other enough would be the types of things that would be happening. What if there's more? What if something were to happen and we wouldn't have each other, which could be a thought that we would have too, right? I mean, that happens. But when it goes into the OCD, then you're doing compulsive things to try to make sure there is enough love, to try to make sure that your partner is safe, to try to be sure nothing will happen to your relationship. And you start to believe that those compulsions actually do have some control over the world and the life that you live and the relationships that you have, when the reality is they don't, because there's plenty of people with love who don't do those things, and it works out just fine.
Do you mind giving me some examples?
Sure. So let's say that if I think something negative about a partner, then I would have to say a prayer. Because if I didn't and something bad happened to them, then I would feel that it was my responsibility that the bad thing happened, because I didn't neutralize it in some way.
Oh.
And so therefore, I have to do this other thing to neutralize that first thought. And now that I have, things are back in balance and everything will be okay and nothing bad will happen to them. Now, imagine doing that 75 times a day.
Oof.
Because OCD is a what if problem. So all you need to think is, what if they don't love me enough? Oh God, that'd be terrible. Okay, what can I do to make sure they love me? Oh, all right, now I'm going to have to send them a text. Because if I don't send them a text, then they'll know how much I love them. Maybe they will get more and more doubts in their life. And then maybe they'll come home tonight and they'll say, you know, I think that I want to break up. And oh my gosh, what if that would be terrible, right? And you're driven by an immediate, I have to fix this thing right now, versus in a love relationship, I feel you're driven more like, how can we grow this even to better and more things? It's not about fixing this kind of little thing, just scratching this itch that you have at the moment. It's about building and growing that we want to see in love.
So then if that person does that compulsive prayer, it gets now to 75 times, in order to make sure then the relationship will be fine or the partner will be fine. And then they see their partner and the partner is having an off day. So maybe they're not giving them the attention that they're looking for. So then the person with the OCD, will they go back home and be like, okay, maybe I need to say it 100 times. Maybe I said it the wrong way. And that's how suddenly it goes from 75 to 100 times to 125 because something wrong happened.
Yep. I didn't do enough. There seemed to be some doubts or not quite the connection today that we had even yesterday. And so I must have done something wrong. I'll double down on this. I'll do more and more of it in order to try to make sure that everything is okay.
Got it. So it's considered more OCD with, because you said sometimes I can want to turn on my light twice or something okay. Like that. The other side, when it's now affecting your day-to-day life and your relationship. Because
right.
Like I have a little quirk that I do when I go to sleep, I have to say a little prayer to the world, or I feel like something bad will happen to my family, which is the weirdest mm-hmm. thing. But I only say it started as twice when I was a child, and now I say it four times. And it's like, I'll say under my breath, even if someone's around me at night, like I can't go to sleep without it, but it's not affecting my day-to-day life or harming anyone. So then that's okay.
Yeah, I would just watch for that being, those are the little things that can become slippery slopes at times. If one day it's like, oh, four didn't feel enough, maybe I need to do six, because it sounds like you like even numbers instead of odd numbers, by the yeah. way you're describing that. I found something out about you there. And then if six is enough, it has to be eight. You know, it's really, really big in that kind of situation where it's just going to grow and grow. So that's where I would just say, if you are noticing it getting bigger than that, that's when you're going to want to be like, what would happen if I didn't? And you might say, well, what if I can't sleep? And what if I have a restless night? And then what if I'm tired tomorrow? And then I won't be good for my guests on the next podcast. And then they'll hate me. And then the show's ratings will tank. And then, you know, you could just take it on and on and on, as you can see.
Yeah. Okay. Luckily, I'm not there. So.
Okay, good. So then. Don't go above four, and I think we'll be okay.
Okay, good. Okay, so given NoCD's focus on virtual therapy, how effective would you say this mode is in treating OCD, particularly relationship OCD, compared to traditional face-to-face therapy sessions?
One of the great things really about the virtual is that I can have multiple people in the session. If you were coming to my office and I was working with you and your partner wanted to be there too, they'd have to maybe take off work and drive over as well or something. Now, find a room, get some privacy, and we could both be in this, or all three of us can be in the session together. And that has really been helpful to get more connection going in working with relationship OCD that I have found.
Yeah. And I think I like virtual sessions so much better, in my opinion, because it feels in a weird way like I'm able to be, me personally, from my experience, like I'm able to be more vulnerable with the person that I'm speaking to versus if they're sitting physically in front of me, it makes me personally uncomfortable and it's harder for me to say my real thoughts or I'm feeling, including if a partner was in a session and they're in a different room, it makes me feel like it would make it easier for couples to actually express what they're feeling without being scared of their partner suddenly looking at them or physically reacting to it.
100% agree on it. Absolutely.
So in your book, Don't Try Harder, Try Different, you discuss different alternative approaches to tackling OCD. Do you mind sharing how these methods can be specifically applied to relationship OCD?
One of the big things that I really push for people is something that I call specialness, the belief that the rules of the world apply differently to me than they do to everybody else. As in, what I'm doing in my relationship, no one else should ever do in their relationship because it would probably ruin their relationship. So I would never give the advice to anyone else to do what I'm doing. And when that's how you follow it, and that's kind of a belief that you have, that's when I want you to step back and say, wait a minute. If I wouldn't give this advice to anyone else because it wouldn't work, that also then means it's not going to work for me too, because I'm actually not special. I'm unique, but I'm not special. And the rules of the world don't apply to me differently than everyone else. So what I truly need to do to get better is to follow the advice I would give anyone else about their relationship and use that in my own relationship instead of set up a different set of rules for myself.
I like that because I think we do often do that where you tell your friends like, oh my God, no, this should not work out. You guys should not be together. But then my situation is different. Like we have something special. He's not calling me because he's so intimidated by our love and blah, 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 blah versus no, it's the same. Got it.
Yeah.
Why do you think NoCD is one of the top leaders when it comes to helping people with their OCD and ROCD? What do you think allows you guys to stand out?
The amount of training and consultation that we do, I think, is second to none for our therapists and what we have our therapists go through in terms of practicing with us before we even have them seeing patients as well, too. And we call our patients members. So when they're working with the members, we want to be sure that anyone who's spending time and money with us is going to get a great product. And that's very important. And our first value as a company is member first. We're going to do everything that we can to put the members first.
So how does NoCD ensure that their patients, their members across different cultural backgrounds feel understood and supported, especially when they're dealing with such a personal aspect such as relationships?
Wonderful question too, because different cultures approach therapy from very different standpoints of you shouldn't go outside the family or talk to anyone else or something. So the beauty of the kind of therapy that we do, it's called exposure and response prevention therapy. That's the name of having you do things that are uncomfortable and not doing compulsions, is that's all very individually developed. So it's developed within the culture, the religion, the orientation, the lifestyle, anything of the person that we're working with. It's not just a template that we say, everybody just go do this. It is individualized to that person in their situation. And therefore, it's an amazingly culturally sensitive experience. Purposely exposing you to something, that's the obsession. And the response prevention is the elimination of the compulsion.
And that is something the only OCD specialist and OCD assists with. It's not something that in regular therapy people would ever experience.
You wouldn't see that in a general talk therapist, no. And unfortunately, a general talk therapist might actually make OCD worse instead of better because they'll want to talk about the obsessions. And OCD would love to talk about the obsessions, believe me.
Right.
Just more talking about it would be great. Can we talk more about it, please? That would be wonderful. And that's not where we want to go with it.
So can you give me an example of an exposure and response type of therapy?
Sure. The basic one that many people hear about is hand washing and contamination, right? And so if somebody were to touch something and then right away want to go wash their hands, and let's say this is not even COVID, this is in their own home, and they have an idea that something in their home is contaminated because 10 years ago, somebody sat on that chair that they didn't like. And so this is an emotional contamination. It's not even a germ contamination. But if I touch that chair, I'll somehow get the essence of that person on me. So I have to go to the bathroom right away, wash their essence off, or else I'll become like them. I'll absorb their essence into me. And so I want to put a delay first on that hand washing. Let's wait 20 seconds before we do it, and then 40 seconds, and then a minute, and then 3 minutes. And we'll just build up more and more until I can get you to actually sit in that chair and recognize it as it's just a chair. Who sat here doesn't matter and doesn't affect me in who I am and who I'm going to be.
Wow. Okay. So I guess it's hard to equate based on people having so many different types of OCD and where they are in their journey. But someone, let's say like that with the hand washing that feels that way, how long of the exposure therapy before they start seeing results, would you say?
We could get there in about 12 sessions where people have made some really significant changes in their lives, at least a 35 to 50% reduction in the symptoms that they came in with. And so that's the beauty of it. It's fast. And the nice thing about the virtual piece, too, is that if you came into my office, that chair is not in my office. But virtually, I can work with you in your home and you can go over to that chair and we could work with that chair right there in your home. So that's a beauty, another beauty of virtual therapy.
I love that. Is there any other patient success story that you want to share, or something or someone that came into your office, whether it was relationship OCD or different types of OCD, where they really just thought they were not, quote unquote, fixable or no one can ever help them? And then you guys and OCD were able to really get them through it.
I've worked with people who did not want to go outside anymore without spending hours checking to make sure that they didn't have any knives on them because they were afraid, what if I were to stab somebody? That would be terrible if I were to actually do that. So this is a subtype of OCD called harm OCD. They have no desire to harm anyone whatsoever. And that's why they spend all these hours checking constantly in their pockets and everything to see if they've got any knives on them. And so I've worked with getting them to walk outside, first go in their yard, open the gate, walk around the house, walk up and down the block and things to do more and more, and eventually get them into a crowd of people and without checking to see if they have any knives on them before they leave the house. Just get up, put the clothes on and walk outside, and no more time spent checking. And we'll just have to sit with the discomfort of worrying, what if I have a knife on me and what if I were to harm someone? Now, when I say this, I realize it could sound like some people say, well, isn't that schizophrenia? Isn't that psychosis or something? No, the people with OCD truly recognize logically, this makes no sense. I know I don't have any knives on me, but it's then emotionally, but what if I do and I just don't know it? And then I were to do something that would be awful and terrible. So they can have the logical conversation about this. So I'm not here to change their logical mind. I'm here to help them deal with the emotions that they have about it.
I'm just thinking about, you know, it's, as you're saying, it's someone who knows they have a problem and they're trying to fix it, especially when they go to therapy. I was just thinking, I can't imagine what it would be like if they had a conversation with a partner or friends and they say, I'm just scared, like, what if I stab someone, blah, blah, and the other people will think, oh my God, I feel in danger or something's wrong with that person, versus that person's actually, they can't help themselves and they're trying to work on themselves. So we should give them some grace, right?
Yeah. One other quick case I could talk about, and we wrote an article on this case so I can go more in depth in it. One of my most rewarding cases was I worked with someone who did not touch her newborn child for the first 6 months of her child's life out of a fear of what if I were to harm or molest my child while changing their diaper. And so she had her mother move in with her and she had her mother take care of her child for the first 6 months because she was afraid she could do something wrong with such a vulnerable little infant. And in working together, when she finally came to see me, at about 7 months of old, she picked up her child for the very first time in her child's life, and she held her baby for the first time. And it was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had in therapy, watching a mom pick up her child for the first time.
That's beautiful. And I think people don't talk enough about what women go through, whether it's during pregnancy, before and after. So how can you tell where it's the line between postpartum that moves into that type of OCD?
Because we sensationalize postpartum psychosis on the news. It's so rare, but when it does happen, it's headlines on the news. And so then anybody's afraid that any negative thought they might have about their child must mean that they want to harm their child and they're a danger. And I've seen plenty, unfortunately, people who have been hospitalized and their children taken for them for a little bit because they've been so afraid of, what if I were to harm my child? And people have thought, well, that's close enough to actually harming your child, so we better just take this child away to protect them. No, this is a very treatable condition, and it's unfortunate that so many people have suffered with this. So that's why I love doing these kinds of shows, because I want to get the word out that this is treatable and people can get help.
That's such a beautiful story. I'm so happy that 6 months after treatment with exposure therapy, she was finally able to hold her baby for the first time, because I think anyone from the outside would look at her and think, oh, what a terrible mother and so on, not understanding that how debilitating those thoughts were probably for her, and how painful it must have been for 6 months to think you're going to harm the thing, that the baby that you carried in your body for all those months. So, wow. I'm
100%.
So glad people like you and your and OCD exists for all of that.
Well, thank you.
Is there anything you would like to add that I may have not asked you?
I have one goal, and that's to help people live the life they want to live and not the life that their OCD wants them to live. Because the life that OCD wants you to live is just doubt and uncertainty and constantly trying to seek an answer that you're never going to find. And if we can help people learn that they can handle doubt, they can handle uncertainty, they don't have to know everything, they can live a very productive and wonderful life. And that's always the goal.
Love that. So where can people find you and the type of therapy that you offer?
You can go to nocd.com, so nocd.com, or treatmyocd.com. And you can also download the NoCD app as well, too. It's available on Google and iPhone as well.
Okay, perfect. I will leave everything else in the description bio of today's episode so you can check all of that out. Thank you so much for coming on and educating all of us on OCD, what OCD does, relationship OCD, exposure therapy, and all of that. And definitely, if you guys have any questions, again, I will leave everything in the bio description of today's episode so you can find him and seek treatment if you are looking for that or it's needed.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you. Bye, guys.